Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A one, a two, a one, two, three, four. Another beautiful day on the Victor Bravo Golf Course. The sun is shining, the birds are about, and there's a sudden buzz in the crowd. Michael Mickelson steps up to the tee box. 15th hole here, driver's recommended. Oh, is he a caveman? Because he suddenly clubbed that one. What do you reckon, George? I mean, did he hit that with a dictionary? Because that was a terrible read.
Oh. Well, g'day. Welcome to golf. Andrew Datto's my name, and the job is pretty good and pretty straightforward. It's just to introduce you to different characters from the game of golf and to see the game another way. Sometimes it might be someone you know, like Craig Parry or Bruce Green or someone like that, Grant Dodd, and sometimes it might be someone you don't know. And I'm not sure you'll know this guy unless you play golf at Coolangatta Tweed. His name is Jared Love. He is the professional there, and he came to golf in a fairly circuitous route and quite a famous route. He's been on all the tours. He's been to Europe. He's played, well, he hasn't played. He's been in the Open. He's done the Masters. He's done Japan. He's had wins all over the world, but as a caddy for Y.E. Yang. It's a really interesting story. He's a lovely guy. As I say, the pro from Coolangatta Tweed, which is a course I got to play over Christmas time. I loved it. I played it before lockdown in the rain, and the greens were off their chops. It was brilliant. So we had a lovely chat. Really lovely guy, great stories and interesting stories and an interesting perspective on the game of golf. So I think you're going to like it. Jared Love.
A bit of a full circle story, really, because I actually, the first caddying job I got was in with Scott Gardner, was through me being a member at Coolangatta Tweed Heads. So I was a member there, Scott was a member there, and he played an amateur event there, which is still going now, the Twin Towns Open, and I was playing rugby league at the time, and I injured my shoulder, and I said, oh, I'll caddy for you if you want. And he ended up shooting 8-under and won that tournament, which was a two-day event. And he said, oh, look, I'm in the Australian Open. Would you like to come down and caddy for me? And I said, yeah, I'd love to. And it was the year that Aaron Baddeley won, so as an amateur. And Scott was an amateur as well, and he came 11th, which would be – probably a big deal if an amateur hadn't won. And then he, so he sort of got no real limelight. And the next event was the Australian Masters, and he came 7th in that, another top 10 as an amateur. And he got an invite to the Greg Norman Invitational. And he got top amateur there, which was, he came top 10 again, 8th, did really well. But in that event was Adam Scott's first event, and he shot 10 under one of the rounds. So that took a bit of gloss off him as well. And when he turned pro, I caddied for him and just met a bunch of guys, and that's how I met Paul Sheehan, and it sort of escalated from there.
Okay, so what's your role as a caddy? Like, I can't imagine. What is your role? Are you doing the yardages? Are you lining
putts?
Yeah,
well, it's gotten easier and easier, I would imagine, these days. But, you know, you get a yardage book. Even when I was caddying years ago, there was Simon Clark used to do them. He did a great job with his yardage books. And, you know, you need that yardage book. And you used to go and put as many numbers in that as possible, carries on bunkers and things like that, which there was some in there, but not all. Where now the yardage books you get, they're so detailed. You can pretty much just grab a yardage book and turn up, and then, you know, you just got to give your player yardages and give your opinion on what club he should hit. And I think at the end of the day, and you hear this a lot, but it's just your delivery in how you're, you know, giving your message, how confident, you know, you don't want to be, you know, I think in Japan, I used to call it, they used to suck wind up there to, a bit like that before they'd give their opinion, and it never really filled a lot of players with confidence. But
the Japanese caddies would suck wind before they give an opinion.
Yeah, there'd be quite a few would actually. Yeah, you'd hear the wind sucking wind, and yeah, you'd think, geez, yeah, I don't know if we're going to hit that shot.
Right, and so what is the? Because it's really interesting when we do get to listen. When we on the coverage and I think you're right, it is really positive, and it's I love this shot for you, you know, I love, and the caddy and then the golfer goes, yeah, I love this shot, yeah, and it's look, I yeah. watch it going, for God's sake,
I know, you know, there is a lot of that, and yeah. It is about just trying to be really positive and really really good delivery, and being prepared, when I first started caddying, I want to be good at it. And I remember we went down to the Australian Masters and Fanny Sunnison was caddying for Sergio Garcia.
Yeah.
And we had a practice round with him, and I asked her if I could walk around. And I just picked her brain on the sort of things that she did. And, there's as much as there can be not a lot in it, or there can be a lot in it, how much detail you want to get into, you know, to try and, you know, give your player the best opportunity if something does happen, if a situation does pop up, you know.
Okay, so is it a performance then? You know, is caddying, it's the bag and the clubs. Is it also a performance from you for the sole benefit of your golfer to keep them in the right spot? Because I'm trying to, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, like, for us as amateurs without caddies, what can we do that you do for ourselves?
That's a good point. I think when I went away caddying and I came back a better player because I started to think about playing the golf through a caddy's eyes almost, like just play smarter, you know, like hit to the dog legs instead of carrying the tree on the corner. Think about the shot going in, you know, where's your best putt going to come from for an uphill putt? Right. You know, little things like that.
Okay.
Taking bunkers out of play. Just trying to, you know, limit the mistakes. Because, you know, like with a professional tournament, you're playing four rounds, and the first two or three rounds you're trying to set it up before you get too aggressive.
Right. And then round four, it's here we go.
Well, yeah, to some point, definitely at some point you may have to put the foot down and sort of go for some things that you may not want to, or you know, sometimes you just get good numbers all day and it's just green light, and you know, those days are unreal.
Yeah, I love it. Hey, so Paul Sheen, you know, you speak the same language, you understand each other, the syntax is pretty much the same, I'm guessing. Then you go from Paul Sheen to Y.E. Yang.
Yeah,
South Korean golfer.
I caddied for Paul, and we had some really good success. He won his first tournament up there in Japan when I caddied for him, and had a second. And then we went back up there and had a bit of a bad trot. Probably, I think we missed about five or six cuts in a row. And I had he ended up going back to Australia, and in the end, you know, it's a ruthless game, and he fired me up there. Which, by the way, Paul and I are great mates to this day. It's just one of those things, you know. Anyway, I was up there for one more week.
So, sorry, one last thing. What was not working? Were you not selling the message properly, or?
I think during that period, he was playing so well early in the year, and then when we came back to Australia for 4 weeks, and we went back over there for about 5 or 6 week stretch. And in that stretch was the British Open. And he actually played good that week, missed the cut by one or two, but all the other cuts he missed by quite a bit. And he wasn't playing well. And, you know, like I think when your player isn't playing well, as a caddy, you're probably a bit flat as well. Mm. And, you know, it's hard to get up. And, you know, it's probably a bit of everything. Like my body language wasn't great and we weren't getting along. And then, you know, it's very similar to a relationship. Like, you know, it's really, you know, if things aren't good, they're not good. And when things are good, they're great.
Yeah, it's your tone, and, Jared. Jared, it's your tone.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the seven iron, mate.
Pretty much. A bit of that. But, you know, and then you can wear on each other. And
yeah.
And, yeah, especially, like I said, when things aren't going well, it's,
okay.
Yeah, it can be tough.
Okay. Yeah, so then, all right. So you're in Japan. You've been punted. You hang around.
So I have 1 week left up there. Yeah, I had 1 week left up there. And so I rang my wife and said, look, I'm coming home, but I may as well try and get a job for next week because I had a flight to the Hokkaido, which is the Northern Island. So I kind of went back into at that time in Japan, you had to register your caddy on a Friday for the next tournament. And it had to be by Friday, 5 p.m. And this is like 3:30 in the afternoon when, you know, Paul said, you know, I'm not playing next week, da, da, da. So I was like frantically looking for someone to work for. I think I asked about five or six guys and no. And a few weeks earlier, we actually were partnered with Yang in a tournament when we were in contention. And I remember Paul and I both talked about how good a player he was, but he just made some really silly mistakes. Anyway, I saw him sitting down. I said, oh, how'd you go this week, Yang? He goes, oh, I missed the cut. And I said, oh, do you need a caddy for next week? But mind you, we're speaking Japanese. He's Korean, I'm Australian. We're speaking Japanese because that's the only way we can communicate. And he goes, no, I don't want a foreign player, you know, a foreign caddy. Okay. And by this time, I'm desperate. So I'm like, Yang, please, we'll have a good week. Please, can I caddy for you?
In Japanese.
In Japanese. He then talks in Korean with his buddy and they're shrugging their shoulders and they go, rightio, I'll meet you at the course at 9 a.m. on Tuesday. I'm like, rightio. And then I grabbed him. I said, right, come with me. You have to register me. So we did all that and I met him on the Tuesday and I was like, geez, after that day, I rang my wife up and said, this guy's unbelievable. He's such a good player. I think we might win this week.
So sorry to interrupt, Jared. So he signs you up. And does that sign you to a fee or are you just on your whatever 5%?
Well, we talked about the fee. He said, how much do you want? I said, this is for the week and this is the percentage. And he said, yeah, rightio.
Okay, right.
So it's all verbal.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that's what it is. And when we went up there, he played really good in the practice round and like hit some solid shots. And I thought, oh, he's a chance this week. And anyway, he ended up winning that week for the first time. And he'd never won before, which was pretty cool. And it was quite, you could see it wasn't me. It could have been anyone. He just needed a caddy.
Right.
He used to do things like, you know, it's 150, it's a 7-iron. And I'm like, yeah, but it's downwind. And, you know, if you carry that bunker, the ball will roll out 5 metres, you know, and stuff like that, and change his club. And, you know, I think he was hitting a lot of good shots and getting himself into trouble.
Right.
And just by hitting the wrong club. And, that week he played unbelievable. And I was like, this guy's the real deal, you know.
And so, again, are you you're doing club discussions in Japanese?
Yes. Yeah, the first 6 months I worked for him was all in Japanese.
So that's pretty amazing to have someone. So he's a professional golfer and you can see he's making mistakes and you've got to talk in a second language, which I'm assuming you're fairly fluent in. But
well, mind you, my Japanese is not very good.
Okay.
So
would you hold up a seven? You wouldn't hold up a seven to him like this and go, it's this.
No. My Japanese was okay and I'd say my accent was probably pretty terrible. His Japanese was a little better than mine. I think the Koreans pick it up a little bit easier.
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing, like, really, when you think back, you know, we're two people from, foreign countries and we're speaking Japanese to communicate. But there was a point where he just went, right, we need to start speaking English because I want to play the US tour. So I just spoke English to him and he just caught on. And We used to have great conversations because a conversation that would take 5 minutes would take us three or four holes. So it was, that used to kill the time when we're out there on the course.
Well, is that maybe one of the secrets that, like, you know, lots of professional golfers say that one of the things is just don't think about the game between shots, you know, like think about golf when it's time to hit a golf ball and the rest of the time. So you guys are probably mongreling around going, you know, it's 10 to...
Oh, look, I honestly believe that there's great caddies out there, but I think it's more important to be able to get along with the person who's carrying your bag than to have a great caddy that you haven't quite got a good rapport with.
Okay. Yeah, so how did you go? I mean, he took you to America and off you went, really? Like,
yeah, well, we in Japan over about a two and a half year period, he won five or six tournaments and was really dominant up there, finishing in the top three in the order of merit, and that got him into world golf events and majors. So we did a bit of them, and then, like, he couldn't really, every time we traveled overseas, he never really did well. Like, you could tell, he just wasn't quite to that level, but you could tell he could get there, if that makes sense. So we had a few glimpses of, I think 2006, it might have been the PGA Championship at Baltusrol. He was coming tied sixth after two rounds. He had a major game, but he just couldn't put four rounds together outside of Japan.
So what was that like for you, as the bloke on the bag, to be with someone thinking, so if you're sixth, you know, after two rounds in a major, what's your level of excitement? How are you feeling?
I've got a bit of a problem. I've got the glass half full all the time, so I had a swing in it. The mind used to wander.
Yeah, so you stuffed it up by saying at the end of the third round, we better start working on your speech, mate.
We'd never talk about that, but I'll tell you, that one was really funny because we got home late that night. I was actually staying with him in a hotel room, and we were both knackered and we went to bed. And I got up the next day about 6 o'clock in the morning to the tea times, which they were announced later that night, but we didn't see because he was, you know, at the later end of the group and there had been some weather delays. He wasn't teeing off till 3:30 in the afternoon. So he was pretty much knackered before he teed off. So, that, you know, there's little lessons you learn like that. You know, in Japan, the tee times are a lot tighter together, and over there, you know, we would have been better off, you know, going out and staying up till, you know, midnight.
Yeah, right.
And just to, you know, get into a rhythm of when you should be waking up, when you should be getting to the course and all those things.
And what is the American experience like when you've got a real player to look after?
Oh, it's unbelievable. You're inside the velvet rope. You know, once you sort of, everything gets given to you. You know, like they get a car every week. You know, like even caddies get a, they've got tents for the caddies for their catering and somewhere just to hang out. Most weeks he was given a hotel room and you know, like I used to book my nights for Monday and Tuesday because I knew on Tuesday night if he had a suite with, you know, one with an extra bedroom, he'd say, "Oh, just come and stay with me." So I'd just book Monday and Tuesdays and hope that he got a suite that week, which he normally did, because he was the kind of guy, Yang, where he liked interacting with people. So when we first went to America, he had no friends or anything. So it was just the two of us. We'd just go out for dinner all the time and, you know, just go and, you know, we'd have weeks off and we'd just go play golf together and just hang out, really.
Okay. Mm. So now, you were at this stage, you were not a PGA member.
No. So when I finished up with Yang, I actually.
But you must have been a very good golfer.
I was scratch plus one sort of golfer. I kind of came back in 2007. I took 9 weeks off to go through the. I'd had enough of caddy. It's not for everyone traveling the world. Like, it was great. I really enjoyed it, but I couldn't imagine doing it forever.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I had a young family. I wanted to have another child, and my wife sort of was like, look, you can keep caddying, but I'm not having another child. But yeah, you know, but so, you know, I wanted to have another child. So I thought, well, if I come home, I want to do something in the golf industry, something that I'm interested in. So I thought what I'll do is I'll apply for the traineeship program, take some time off caddying, see if I can get in and do that. And yeah, in the end, I got accepted into the traineeship program and yeah, did that.
And is that can you only get accepted into the program by being such a good golfer?
Like, at the time I went through, it changes. It does change a lot. You do have to have a standard of golf. The standard now is not as high as it used to be. I think when I went through it, you had to be off a 2 handicap or lower.
Okay.
You had to do some playing assessment rounds. I did like 5 or 6 playing assessment rounds, and had to have my average under a certain amount, and then beyond that, had to find a job and go through the interview process through the PGA.
Okay, so just to finish with Mr. Yang, you finished with him in 2007.
Yep. When I finished with him, that he won that HSBC tournament in 2006.
Yep.
There, and that got him into the top 50 in the world, and getting into that top 50 in 2007, we had so many big tournaments to play. And I thought that was probably, you know, I wanted to do that year of, you know, caddying in all the big tournaments, all the majors. And, you know, I went to the Masters, and that was, you know, such a highlight as well. So we did that, didn't have great success, but I kind of knew deep down that he would go on with it. He just needed time over there.
And so how was the Masters as a caddy?
Yeah, it's great. Like one of the best weeks of my life. You know, yeah. I would not say the best week of my life, but definitely.
Yeah.
It was. It was unreal. It was. And he made the cut. He actually contended a little bit. Like, I think it was a year that Zach Johnson won with 2 over par.
Yeah.
And he, at one point, we were 5 over par, maybe with 27 holes to go. So we, you know, we were a chance. Then it was so brutally tough that week.
And do you watch the scoreboard and, you know, go, and you're thinking in your head, oh yeah, yes.
Oh, come not on. That week.
Come on.
Yeah. No, not that week. I didn't think, like, it's funny, you do get feelings when you on certain weeks, and they tended to always end in a win or a top 5.
Yeah.
When you go, geez, we're a massive chance this week. And you could sort of get it from his body language or seeing him hit on the range. And, yeah, but they're pretty cool. Like that tournament, in, the HSBC in China, even though Tiger was there, Tiger had played won eight stroke play events in a row. And Yang broke his record there and Tiger comes second. And that was a week where, even though there were so many great players there, like it was basically 40 out of the top 50 in the world, was just like, geez, I think we're going to go all right this week. And, yeah. And he did.
So he knocked off, when he knocked off Tiger at the HSBC, did you play with Tiger?
No, he was a couple of groups in front.
What a
he
shame.
He wasn't really, I know. But we played with Retief Goosen, actually, and Goosen was leading by 2 shots. And it was just, yeah, Yang got off to a hot start that day. He had like 7 putts in 7 holes. Like, he just holed everything, had a chip in and all sorts of stuff. But,
yeah.
How
is Goosen? I mean,
he's just like a steely, you know, like gives you nothing type of competitor.
Yeah.
Like, you know, looks so mentally strong. It looks like nothing could bother him. And he was just cruising and just a couple of things happened. And I just remember looking at him, he kind of had a couple of soft bogeys at the same time Yang had 2 birdies. And we went from being tied to having a 4-shot lead. It just happened like that. It was unbelievable. And it just sort of, you could see when, I remember when Yang held a putt, Retief kind of looked up like, he looked like he was in a bit, and that was the first time I looked at him and thought, oh, I think we might have him here.
Did he look at you?
Not necessarily at me, but I looked at him and I could see he kind of looked a bit shocked, you know.
I remember
I'm
glad you said he was a steely sort of thing, because I played in a pro-am with him at the Australian Open once. So he said 5 words for the day, which were, he said, hello and goodbye. And he said, it's 140 meters from that mark. And that's all he said for the whole day.
Well, that's more than I got.
Yeah, right. Hey, do you, as a caddy, do you game the other players?
Sorry, do
you? Do you game the other players? Like, you know, do you, not sledge or anything, but does your behaviour, do you try to affect their performance with your behaviour or looks or do you know what I mean?
No, not me personally. Things may have changed now, I'm not really sure, but the guys, you know, like I used to like talking to the other players if I could. Like, you know, you'd sort of get a read on that pretty early on, like Goosen didn't want to talk. But, you know, like guys like Ernie Earls, he loves chat.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. And, you know, sometimes, like there's a few players that we used to end up going out for dinner with and, you know, like it was definitely some good rapport amongst the players. We used to go out for dinner. Like Ian Poulter used to love Korean, so we used to go out with Ian Poulter quite a lot.
Yeah,
and he's a great guy. Like he gets used to get a lot of bad press, but you know when you get to know him, he's a really really nice guy. Yeah,
he's got a very funny very funny Instagram account. He's a machine.
Yeah,
he's a pest actually.
Sorry?
He's an Insta pest. Hey, So you finished with Yang. You came back. You got your ticket, and now you're working with amateur golfers. So sort of where we were sort of talking a bit at the beginning, where do they start? Like with a game blossoming the way it has, lots of new golfers, where should they begin? What's the starting point to being acceptable in the golf course?
Everyone can start at such a different level. Like I find that people that have played sport, any sort of ball sport can kind of come in and really get golf straight away. So those sorts of people, in my opinion, should just play. Just play as much as they can. Get the odd lesson, but just try and get out there, hit the ball as much as they can, play as much as they can. And I find that's what tends to happen. But you get the people on the other hand who probably haven't come from a sporty background that try and take it up, really they should be looking at playing the game from the green back and, like getting a handle on putting and chipping and then just trying to get longer from there.
Yeah.
I always encourage new people to the game when they go out and play, they're not playing competition, so I tell them to tee the ball up on every shot.
Oh, okay.
Just tee it up, create a perfect lie, just try and enjoy it and play Ambrose. Like a lot of new ladies getting into it, go out and play Ambrose with your husband or a friend, and don't rely on hitting your own ball all the time.
Yeah.
Just have a shot and then move to the next shot, because you can really, if you're not seeing improvement in golf, it can really, it's a game that drives you crazy at any level.
Every level.
Yeah.
it's debilitating, and utterly exhilarating, how do you shoot, how do you shoot something great on one day? How can you drive the ball so well one day and not be able to putt and then putt like a bloody pro and not be able to get off the tee? Like, it doesn't make any sense. So that's, how do you explain that? And how do you deal with that also with professional golfers? Like, when you're caddying, how do you deal with those swings and roundabouts as well?
Well, I guess you just get out what you put in. You really do. Like the guys that practice really hard on the right things, they don't necessarily struggle all the time with those things. They might have ups and downs. I went back and caddied actually when I finished my traineeship for another guy, D.H. Lee, who still, I think he plays on the Korn Ferry Tour, but he wanted me to go up to Japan and caddy for him, and he was such a talented player, but wouldn't put the work in. And we sort of had enough discussions, I guess, or arguments, if you like, to finally get him to put the work in. And when he put the work in, he never had any issues. And, right. you know, he went on to have great success, and he won the he won a few events. And, you know, like it comes back to, like, you've got to have the talent, but if you can put that work in, which is, you know, it's hard. It's hard work.
Yeah.
That's what I see. I see a lot of young guys who want to be pros, and, you know, I'll be honest, they're kind of going the wrong way about it.
When you say they're going the wrong way about it, what is the wrong way? I mean, is it practicing the wrong things or?
No, they just don't work hard enough.
Oh, okay.
They're just like only because I've seen what it takes.
Yeah.
I couldn't, there's no way I could do it too. Like the dedication that's, you know, that especially the Korean golfers that you know, I can't speak for other countries, but I've caddied for quite a lot of Korean guys. Geez, they work hard.
So it's not enough to want to play well. You have to practice. See, this is what, and this is the for us as well. You know, you can't just go, I don't get it. You don't get it because you don't bloody practice, you idiots. But we can't practice right. at the but moment.
It's not only that they want it, it's almost like they need it as well.
Yeah.
So they've just got that extra, you know, their extra want and need that, you know, and you find the great players, they do have that,
yeah.
you know, and they go about it in different ways. They're, you know, a bit stealth-like, but, you know, imagine, you know, the Aussie guys, you know, like Cam Smith, I don't know him at all, but he looks like a pretty laid-back character. You know, got the long flowing mullet at the moment, and he gives off this sort of vibe that he's a bit of a cruiser, but I'll guarantee he works his butt off.
Yeah.
Mm.
So that's what you mean about the stealth mode, just sort of.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you wouldn't know what he's really thinking.
No, you wouldn't.
You know he's competitive, but like he hides it pretty well.
Okay. And so is that? I mean, it's certainly something that I find with talking to, you know, professionals and listening to podcasts about them winning the Open and things like that. They're all single-minded in their ability to actually play really, really well. They rarely question how good they are.
Yeah, like, that's a gift as well. Like going back to Yang, I just knew when Yang had a chance to win, it didn't matter who was on the leaderboard. He was never going to choke.
Right.
Someone had to beat him. And, you know, obviously that happens, but he was, you know, a lot of people say, oh, what's happened to Yang now? Well, he didn't really, he only started playing golf when he was 19. He only started becoming good when he was in his late 30s. So, you know, he's almost 50 now.
Okay.
So he'll I imagine, be on the seniors tour in a couple of years. But, you know, just that mental, I've never seen anyone as mentally strong as him when he had a chance to win. It was, you know, he didn't always win, but the other guy had to beat him.
And so what did he do? Like, I think it's fascinating. Did his demeanor change? Did he?
Yeah, it did. It's kind of like, his chest kind of just puffed out a bit and he just got this look in his eye. You know, he used to say stuff to me like, you know, one event, I think it was like about the third or fourth event that we won, and we're like 6 shots behind. Starting the day and got off to a hot start. And it was a new event in Japan and there wasn't that many leaderboards around or we weren't taking much notice and got around to about the 12th hole and we saw a leaderboard. And I think Yang was 6 under for the day or maybe five or six. And I still didn't really see a leaderboard and it was a pretty easy course. I thought that we might be within 3 or 4 and a good chance to finish second because the final group was behind us. And we have a look and we're tied for the lead. And he said, where are you going tonight? And I said, oh, yeah, I'm flying back to Tokyo or whatever. And he goes, well, as soon as we finish, change your flight to Osaka. That's where we're having the winner's party tonight. And I was like, hey, ease up. Let's just finish the game. But, you know, he went on and won that tournament. But that's the kind of things that he used to say. And, you know, he said that a couple of times and it only come off the once where he did actually win. But
did you go to Osaka?
Yeah, I think I did, yeah.
Hey, so you work a lot with juniors. If Yang started playing golf at 19, Grant Dodd's another one. He started playing golf in his late teens. How do you, what about the kids, you know, how do you keep them interested if they're, and I know your daughter's a very good golfer as well, so.
Both my kids play and they're both pretty good. Look, it's a tough one. That's why, you know, I encourage them to keep playing all sports and keep up their academics, I guess, and all that type of thing. But, you know, in a look, it's just, I find that in Australia, if you, as a junior, aren't any good, like when I say good, like one of the, you know, top kids by the time you're 18, it's like, oh, well, good try. You know, you better go get a job or go to uni and do that. But the difference, I guess, in Korea, and, you know, it's probably a wealth thing, I'm not sure, but they got guys just coming on the tour at age 26, 27. And they're coming on and, you know, there's a good example. He's quite young actually, but he's only just started to really, he's 26 or 27, he might even be 30 now, but he won not long ago on the US tour, KH Lee, you know, and I think he got on the tour when he was maybe 21 or 22.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of Aussies just stopped playing. A lot of Aussie kids.
Yeah.
And we just haven't got the system. We've got a great junior system through to age 18. And it's just my belief that there's not a great system like there is in America where they have their university system. You know, and some of our Aussie kids go over there and get on scholarships and, you know, something that my wife did when she was younger and you know, great experience for them. But we've got nothing over here for them to keep playing. We've got the traineeship and that's basically it. But that, you know, the guys go into that, they work 38 hours a week, they play golf in a tournament on a Monday against each other, and they have got quite a few assignments, and you find it wears them down.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I've got a couple of trainees that work for me, and, you know, like most trainees will tell you this, their golf goes backwards during their traineeship.
Yeah. Well, there's other things as well, isn't there? There's like, there's boys and there's girls and there's the TAB account and there's the TAB and there's life and cars and, you know, there's life. Right.
There's so many.
It's great.
There's so many variables. You know, you have to really, like I said, like some of these guys that do make it, and get it, not only do they want it, it's like they need it as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's tough. It's tough for any Aussie now to make it that doesn't go to America.
Okay. And Cooling out of Tweed. As I say, I mean, your greens, I couldn't believe it. They were rock hard. Like, you know, it was, you'd have a 8-iron.
You must have played the West Course.
I loved it. Like, it was really wet.
Yeah, the West Course, I think they laid the greens about 3 years ago.
Yeah.
The new variety, Tiff Eagle.
Yeah.
And they just take a few years to settle down, but they've just started to really settle down now. And they're at the point now where they're quite receptive if you hit a good shot. But if you don't hit a good shot, you're
going to
get punished.
Sure. Yeah, that's like I was on steroids. I was hitting the ball another 20 metres because it's rolling off. Well, look, it's been great talking to you, Jared. I've really enjoyed it. And I think, you know, there's some good lessons in there for everyone. And before you go, what's the one thing everyone should experience in the game of golf before they move on from the game?
Hole-in-ones are always good. Look, I just think, you know, being a part of a golf club, being a member of a golf club and you know, playing week in, week out, like I know one thing, like Coolangatta is a real traditional club in that way where, you know, if you're playing a Wednesday and a Saturday, you see the same guys upstairs. You don't necessarily have to play with them, but it's a really good vibe. And, you know, if that's what your thing and you want to be social, it's no better place to be than a golf club. Be part of a membership base for sure.
Yeah, I think that's actually one of the best tips I've heard about the game of golf. It's just be part of a club, be part of the community. Jared, thanks so much for your time. Next time I'm up there, hopefully, you know, we can catch up for real instead of being on Zoom. This has been terrific.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, I look forward to it.
Ever Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.